Welcome to Truth News Radio Australia. It is the 22nd of August 2008. I'm Joshua Jackson, and I'm here with Harold Fenton. Today we've got a magnificent, huge show lined up for you folks, where I'm going to cover the huge NIST report that's come out from the States, talking about why the Building 7 collapsed, or the reasons that they cover up why Building 7 collapsed, and we're going to be deconstructing the lies in that document with John Bursell. And John Bursell's on the line. John Bursell, how are you?
Good, thanks, Josh, and g'day, Harold. How are you guys going?
Good evening, John. I am absolutely superb.
For the listeners out there, John is a is from truthaction.org.au. He's a major part of the 9/11 truth movement here in Australia. He's also a registered aircraft engineer, and he knows a massive amount of information when it comes to the facts and figures behind the engineering side of the questions we have to ask about the 9/11 incidents.
Indeed, and they are many, many, John. You've had a chance to actually study the report. I've only looked at the summary article, which was published on the NIST website.
Yep.
And I have to say, I was pretty underwhelmed.
Yeah, it was good for a laugh, really.
Good for a laugh, yeah. Although something tells me that there isn't going to be much laughter, because there's going to be tears, I think, in the end, because I really see I see them slamming the door on us, and really now, really, the gauntlet, just throwing down the gauntlet, and basically we're going to have to do something to reclaim civilization, science, ethics, reason.
Yeah, it's a great demonstration of how poor the system we live in today is, that's for sure. And that's quite easy to demonstrate using this report. So, I mean, as an exercise in science, it's a good thing. And it's also a great thing because it rules quite a few things out. So it narrows the ground that we're arguing. But now, like you said, we really, really have to make an argument about why this report doesn't add up, and why it's basically, it is slapping us in the face. It's basically showing disdain for people's intelligence, and it's amazingly bad, with a very simple conclusion. And we can work through that if you'd like. I've prepared a brief review of what I've read. I've had a look at the same article you've had a look at, the summary, and the press release, and also I've had a quick gloss over a few hours the final report on the collapse of World Trade Center Building 7, just to check basically where they've got their information from and how they've prepared the report. I mean, obviously,
yeah.
I'm not a structural engineer or an architect, but we've become very good in this movement at sort of taking apart the language of things and looking at the drives and the motives behind these sorts of things.
I think one thing to first talk about is the fact that they've pretty much debunked the popular mechanics argument of structural damage to the building, and that was exact, and most of the people backing the official story have always used Popular Mechanics. Every time Popular Mechanics, some two-bit magazine, to why we don't need a proper investigation, why we don't need a proper and true independent investigation, was that they want structural that there was structural.
Do you remember all the people that they cited that said that well, the buildings fell down because there was a whole lot of floors were scooped out? I kept hearing that phrase, scooped out. They kept talking about the structural damage. They kept showing that photograph over and over again of the corner of the building, which everyone thought was faked because it looks very odd. And yet now with the final report, they're basically sidestepping that whole argument and now moving back to a pure fire-based argument.
Not any
Yeah, absolutely. Would you mind if we just step back for a little bit and just go to a bit of background for the listeners about
sure.
who NIST
Absolutely.
Are,
Absolutely.
Who the Department of Commerce is, who Cheyenne Sunder is, the now director of the fire and building division of NIST.
Absolutely.
And sort of what's happened to this stage, like what we know about the history of the events to do with Building 7.
Great
if
idea.
I could just briefly, obviously, the Department of Commerce, its head is Bush appointed. So that's one important fact for everybody to understand, is that this is a political organisation that's supported by the Bush administration. And most of the people inside that organisation have changed since the events of 9/11, or positions have been taken by new people. And so that's really the situation that we need to put the whole view of this report in, is the fact that it's a Bush-driven group of people.
Well, yes. Not only that, they've got huge contracts in anti-terrorism contracts. NIST develop a lot of bomb sniffing technology, anthrax sniffing, a lot of chemical sniffing technology, also in security and homeland security contracts. They've got huge amount of vested interest in this whole affair.
That is, but I mean, it's a side thing. That does give us a broad picture. You're right that they do have a lot of interest in the war on terror as a whole and all those sorts of things. That's true. But I think that something that you can actually use to prove a point about this Shyam Sundar, I don't know if you know much about him, but he's had a meteoric rise to fame within NIST over the last 5 years. And I'll just run you briefly through a little bit of history about this fellow. He's from India. He studied in Delhi. That was where he originally started out. But I just prepared a quick sort of overview of what he's done in NIST. Now, first of all, he moved in 96-97 to work at the head office as like a junior analyst there, and then he moved his way to a senior analyst. But he was right at the sort of heart of where the director of the whole institution is, so he got to see the workings there. Now, this is normally something they do when they're preparing someone for something. They put them in as the adjutant or as someone under the people that really control these organisations. So he had a bit of a journeymanship there. Then he moved in 1998, he moved into the Chief of Structures Division. In 2002, he went to the Chief of Materials and Construction Research. Now, obviously, the NIST investigation started in 2002. Now, all of a sudden, we see a chain of events here that are quite interesting. They make him the acting deputy director during the period of preparation of the report of the World Trade Center 1 and 2 collapses. And then just before the report is released, where they would have already had it read, they'd just be doing the final sort of edit and et cetera, so they'd know what's been said. They then make him the actual deputy director. Then we see when he's preparing this report on Building 7, he is then made the acting director. And then just before the report's released, he's made the director of the actual building and fire research laboratories. So constantly we see him getting promoted. Now, he also received a gold medal for distinguished service for the government just before the report was released, the original World Trade Center collapse report on 1 and 2. And but at the same time, we see him receiving these accolades and these promotions, back-to-back promotions, in massive scales in salary increase over these jumps from an analyst. In a short period of 10 years, he's now the director of a whole section and probably the next director of NIST. That's what looks like it's going to happen with him with this meteoric rise. We actually find that there's been much criticism in him at the same time. Now, the person that actually is doing his job before he came into this position, or the last director of the fire and construction section of NIST, was James Quintier, PhD. Yeah. Now, he actually came out and said, and I don't know if you remember this, but if you go to patriotsquestion.com, you'll find that he said numerous things about the report, and basically he questions the whole validity of the report about World Trade Center 1 and 2, the way they collapsed. And he makes statements like, I think the official conclusion that NIST arrived at is questionable. Let's look at the real alternatives that might been the cause of the collapse in the World Trade Center towers and how it relates to the official cause and what the significance of one cause versus the other. So he's really talking about looking at the controlled demolition type argument there. And he's made numerous other statements as well. And so have quite a few
and
other...
And who was this?
This is James Quintier. He was the previous director of the labs that now this new fellow, this...
Wow.
Sunder
fascinating.
Is now doing. So he's actually directly gone out against what the report said about World Trade Center Collapse 1 and 2.
Now, from memory, John, I think there was an article that he wrote a few months ago where he was talking about how the analysis that NIST had done was inadequate or something, or it didn't.
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah. He's been outspoken on this issue.
Yeah.
And there was also, obviously, you've got Colonel Bob Bowman, who was in charge of the Star Wars program under Carter and Ford, another director of a government area. You know, he's got a PhD in aeronautics and also in nuclear physics. And we've had Dwayne Dietz that's come out as well, saying that he thinks the report's been of very low quality. And he was the former director of the aerospace projects at NASA. Anyway, so there's been quite a few people that have been outspoken against this fellow as he's had this meteoric rise through NIST. Now, this is something that we'd expect to see with someone that was writing bad reports for the government. Anyway, okay, so a bit of a background on who Shyam Sunder is. Now, obviously, Building 7 collapsed at 5:20 in the afternoon on September 11. It was about 7 hours after it was set fire by the North Tower collapse, which was the first tower hit, but the second tower to collapse. The debris stroked the side of the building and ignited fires on approximately 10 floors, this report says. Now, I don't know if we really have evidence of that. I know that we've seen the smoking side of the building, but we don't really know where the fires are. All I've seen is probably fires on three or four floors from what I've seen in the photos. I don't know. What do you think there, Herwood? How many floors have you seen when you've done your sort of observations of the photos?
Sure. I look, you know, in the photographs that we've seen, and there's not very many of them which are in the public domain, there's usually no more than at one time. I mean, you can see burnt out floors in some photos, but in terms of fires continuously raging in any single photograph, I don't think I've seen more than like three floors burning at once. You know what I mean? Like I've seen photographs where there's three floors burning, but like then a couple of blacked out floors where a fire has burned out already.
Yeah, burned out already. But definitely not raging infernos. Now,
not even the whole
typical
floor.
It's very only typical of a standard block fire that's in you know, that you see all the time in big building blocks that.
I'd just like to point out here, just while you were talking, John, I just Googled up James Quintier. And just for those who are listening, you can find an article by him. And the title of that article is "A Former Chief of NIST's Fire Science Division Calls for Independent Review of World Trade Center Investigation." Well, that's a mouthful. The article is by Alan Miller, and it's actually from 2007. But it looks exactly what you were saying, and
it's a slightly different name to what they call that division now.
Yeah.
But it's the same basic job, from what I can gather from looking through the NIST website.
Yeah, for sure.
Anyway, so now let's go to a bit of a background. The things they ruled out and things they ruled in the basic sort of overview of the report. Now they said that the fires were completely normal for a building. So there's nothing extraordinary about the fires in the building. They're just normal fires that we'd see in any workplace in the city, any city building.
They've ruled out the diesel generator as being a cause or a factor in it, haven't they?
Yeah, that's right. It's just completely normal fires over approximately 10 floors.
Yeah.
Okay, now the diesel fuel tanks have been absolutely ruled out as far as contributing in any way to the fire. Okay, so it's been ruled out. We've heard about the five or so columns that were severed by the collapse of the North Tower onto the building at about 10:26. They say that didn't matter whether it happened or not, the building would have still collapsed. So we just rule that out. It's not really pertinent at all. As you mentioned earlier about Popular Mechanics, you know, they were very heavy on talking about this damage that was done to the building and how it stressed other members, and because of the structure, the strange structure of this building over the subway, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
It led to all these extra stresses and tensions on the joints. So all this other hogwash that they came up with, discounted completely.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, they also say there's no evidence of explosives, but the way that they analyse the use of explosives in the building is quite bizarre. What they basically do is they say that there's no evidence of explosives because we didn't have these loud bangs recorded on evidence that they had, or, you know, whatever they looked at. They didn't sort of talk about, you know, some of the other videos we've seen where there had been loud bangs. They looked at a specific amount of videos, which they don't really say which videos they looked at or which audio tracks they looked at. And they talked to some witnesses that said there wasn't any of these.
I've got a quote here that says that the team said that the smallest blast event capable of crippling the critical column would have produced a sound level of 130 to 140 decibels at a distance of half a mile, yet no noise this loud was reported. Now, is that true? Because I seem to distinctly remember reports of a huge boom that occurred before the building collapsed.
There was. Now, that's with, if there's nothing in the way. For starters, that's, you know, you're in the city, there's always something in the way, isn't there? You know, between you and wherever the building is. I mean, unless obviously you're on the pile and you're in direct sort of view of the building, I suppose that's maybe what they're talking about. But this talking about this very, very loud bang, this is true. Like, explosions are very, very loud. Now, but they actually go on in one part of the report, or it could be in one of the summaries, where they say that the sound would have been 10, this is where you are, like, it's not at the building, this is like if you're a considerable distance from the building where people were, where the observers were pushed back to before the collapse of the building, just before they did the countdown, which we know about. Anyway, they say that it's going to be 10 times louder than being at the front of a rock concert. Okay, 10 times louder. Now, the way they make that calculation, what I've figured out, not what they've said, but they've said a rock concert is not supposed to be any louder than 110 dB, which is about the same loudness as a jet engine running, or the same loudness as if you're playing an actual drum kit as hard as you can. That's right. About 110 dB. But the way that it works is that even though the half power point or double, every 3 dB you need to put in, double the energy to get another 3 dB, if that makes sense. So you've got to put in more electricity, like through an amplifier, every 3 dB, you've got to do it by double. So if you take 3 dB for 110 dB up to 140 dB, obviously there's 30 dB difference. You put 3 into that and you get 10. So that's where they've got the 10 times.
So
but in actual fact, this, if you know anything about sound, you'll know, and I've done this as part of my studies and also working a little bit in the music industry, 10 dB actually sounds double to the human ear. It's not 3 dB. 3 dB is how much power you've got to put in. You've got to put double the power in it for every 3 dB. To make it sound double, it has to be 10 dB louder. So even in the worst-case scenario, it could only be 3 times as loud. So that's completely erroneous, that part of the report where they say 10 times as loud.
Can I just add another thing, which I find incredible about this, is that this issue of sounds of explosions has come up over and over again in regard to the collapse of the other two towers. And we've been told to disregard sounds of explosions because whenever the official line people speak, they always say, well, in a fire, things explode. So, I mean, it's a catch-22, isn't it?
Even though there was no gas in those towers.
It's like when there's sound of explosions, they tell you, oh, well, sound of explosions doesn't mean explosives. It could be transformers.
That's right. It could be
gas cylinders. Okay. But in this case, they're saying, oh, there was no sound of explosions. Therefore, it wasn't a controlled demolition. But if there was sound of explosions, they'd say, oh, fire causes things to go bang. I mean,
look, it's just so ridiculous. The building comes down.
But what they're doing, Harrywood, is for the people that want to, you know, that want to hear no evil, see no evil, and speak no evil. You know, the people that have got, you know, both hands over their eyes and they're holding on as tight as they can. When one finger lifts, they just need to give those people a little shred, and that's what this is. It's a little shred to put that finger back down so they can go back to sleep. And that's what they're doing. They know you, me, and Josh aren't going to you know, buy this crap, you know. But, you know, most of the people aren't going to buy it because they're looking for a way to believe that what we know is true is not true. And that's what this report's providing. That's really
any educated person can look at the image of Building 7 from the other side, the side that you always see in that typical shot where the fires aren't. And you think, okay, if it was by fire and the scrapings from the other side, the building would collapse into the scrapings in a sort of ununiform fashion. Instead, this thing comes crumbling down into the perfectly clean face as well as the totally scarred face, perfectly down into its own footprint. It's absolutely absurd that any educated person and a scientific community and an arm of the government that is so meant to have so much prestige to come out with such garbage is absolute a slap in the face for science in general.
Well, you know, one thing that comes to my mind thinking about this is the question of criminality. The question of what do we do with the criminality? Let's be positive about this, folks. I don't want to fall into a negativity that says, oh, these people will never be brought to justice. They'll always get away with it. I don't think they will.
I think this is digging deeper.
I think we should be thinking about what are we going to do with these people who've committed these, and they're unique crimes. I mean, the crime of committing 9/11 was one thing, but the crime of covering it up.
Oh, absolutely.
And I'm talking about people like Shyam Sunder and, you know, many, many others.
They are protected by it because of some of the things they've said in this report. They've actually, you can see, if you look into it from their point of view of covering their ass, that they have done that in a way. And I'll get to that because I've noticed this as a theme moving through this report. Anyway, let's get to the next thing, which is thermite.
Okay.
Thermite, not thermite. You know, thermite's more likely, and super thermite is probably the most likely thing to use. But thermite, which is the very old style, you know, just very basic mixture of aluminium oxide and other ingredients.
As a cutting charge.
That can cut through steel, okay?
Yeah.
Now, they analyze that, and the way they come up with the reason that that doesn't exist. Now, this is all, we probably should jump to this point just for the listeners. There is no physical evidence looked at for this report. No physical evidence.
None at all.
Or physical testing done on anything for this report.
Oh, well, that just rules it out right there, doesn't it?
I mean, we've got 400 architects and engineers who have through Stephen Jones's work, looked at physical evidence and come up with traces of thermite.
They have. But anyway, so the way that they debunk thermite, they only look at thermite, they don't look at thermite or super thermite.
Yeah.
Well, it doesn't really matter. The way they debunk it
is
they come up with some analysis of how much they need to melt so much steel, and then they say, we need to go through a foot of the steel beam to cut it.
Oh, so they say it's just so hard.
And they say we need 100 pounds of thermite. Now, I don't know if you've watched.
Hey, guess what, folks? That shows you just how bloody hard it is to make a building crumble. It ain't easy.
Yeah. So they're saying thermite.
We need 100 pounds per column, they're saying.
Okay, folks. Thermite, you basically drop thermite into a block of engine and it'll just eat through it like a hot knife through butter.
A pound of it will eat through an engine. That's
it just
dribbles
through, right? And they're saying fire, which is so flippant and weak, does it a better job.
Well,
anyway,
that's right.
Continue.
Now they do go into the fact it's difficult to get, this thermite to run through the. And it is. You've got to have ceramic guides on this stuff, right? Which is not difficult to design. And you're talking probably about, you know, maybe something a few inches thick that wraps around a beam that's got some ceramic guides. It's designed for the purpose. You know, of course they're going to design this stuff, you know, to do this job. But 100 pounds of thermite is ridiculous. But anyway, that's the way they make sense so people can put that finger back down on their eye. They say, okay, we need 100 pounds per column. And we need to cut the columns, most of the columns on every second or so floor, as they would previously normally do with an oxyacetylene torch before they bring down a building. Okay, so, you know, we need 100 pounds per beam, but, of course, we know that they're saying that fire can do this.
Anyway, John, we're just going
we'll break
for a radio call sign.
Yep.
Just hang on.
Propaganda. Disinformation. Deception, deceit, spin, untruths, half-truths, lies, inner truths. Looking for something different? Visit Truth News Radio Australia, www.truthnews.com.au.
Hello, we're back with the Truth News Radio Australia, and we're here with John Bursell of Sydney 9/11 Truth, truthaction.org.au. And John is sharing with us his insight and research into the NIST final report on the collapse of Building 7. John, please continue from where you left off.
Okay, well, we've gone through the contributing factors, or, you know, we know they've ruled out the fuel oil, they've ruled out the the fires being anything different to normal. They've ruled out the damaged columns due to the collapse of the other tower. They've ruled out explosives and thermite using basically erroneous arguments, which I don't understand, which seem rather ridiculous, which we've had a bit of a laugh over. But anyway, now we get to the collapse sequence. Now, this is what they say for the collapse sequence. And you might remember that I said that they've left themselves little ways out here and there with what they've said. Now, first of all, they've said this was an extraordinary event. Okay, so if we look that up in the dictionary, what does extraordinary mean? Non-normal, non-usual, not what you'd expect. It's extraordinary.
Yeah.
And anyway, so that's the first thing they've said. So they've really said that, wow, this is weird. And they've been saying that all the way along. Now, but it's an extraordinary event requiring a new phenomena, a new phenomenon in this case, a single event. A single event that has not been previously considered specifically by any engineers that have ever made a building.
What? So you're saying that people don't have to, you know, because to blow up buildings, to bring down buildings, to implode them, to get rid of them, to build up new buildings, they spend millions and millions of dollars contracting these companies to set thermite charges and to... But I was thinking, after this, we could just burn them.
Hang on a sec, Josh. They don't use thermite in conventional demolitions. Let's not send out that message to our audience, because we know thermite is not a typical... In fact, it's not used in demolitions, correct, John?
That's correct. Normally, that's correct, unless it's in a military type situation where you've got to do it very fast and you've got to make it come down very fast. Okay, so this is just giving you an idea of the words they use. Now, they say it's an extraordinary event requiring a new phenomenon that has not been previously considered. Specifically, okay, so they sort of cover themselves there as well, saying, well, all things have been considered during building construction, but not specifically. So they use all this dodgy sort of language. The thing that this spontaneous event we're talking about that's specifically not been considered previously, it's thermal expansion. Now, metal expands when you heat it. Now, that is a principle that I think a 10-year-old understands that's done any sort of science. But the actual thermal expansion of a long beam, of a long floor beam, is the thing that has never been specifically considered that led to this complete collapse of this building. A single event, which is a single long beam from column 79 to column 44 or whatever other column it is, but it's all around this one single column 79, on the 13th floor, just happens to be the 13th floor. Anyway, the joints along that beam, because of this thermal expansion, because it's a reasonably long sort of span, it's not unusually long, but it's reasonably long, we've had this extraordinary occurrence of this thermal expansion. But do we have an extraordinary amount of heat? No, we have a completely normal fire with a completely normal amount of heat, only about 300 degrees Celsius. Now, they actually specifically say there's no structural strength lost by the steel during this fire. There's no structural strength loss because we don't see any structural strength decreasing in steel until we get over 400 degrees Celsius. Now, the fire temperatures are approximately 300 degrees Celsius as a maximum, and in a few places, they think they might have possibly reached 400 degrees Celsius, but they don't know because they don't have any physical evidence, because it was all removed to save the people. Were there any dead people in Building 7? Were there any people under the rubble in Building 7?
I think there was, no.
No. So they removed all the evidence, even though we know they had global positioning trackers on each truck that took the metal away. They're saying that they couldn't really sort out where it all came from, so they don't really know. So they're just going to stick to their computer model. Anyway, so that's at the end of the day, it's a single event due to thermal expansion, which has never been specifically considered in building construction, which I think sounds like a whole lot of hogwash to me, as Bob Bowman would say.
Yes.
Anyway, and this new phenomenon that we've seen is extraordinary. So there you go. So, I don't really know. Does that make a lot of sense to you guys, or does that sound very unlikely?
It is. Well, you know what it sounds to me is
it sounds absolutely ridiculous. It's just such a slap into the face. I mean, I'm an artist. I'm a designer. I'm a high school graduate with a little bit more education. And really, it doesn't take much knowledge of physics and understanding of a little bit of architecture that. It just can't happen. And for them to really, I mean, What I think is a good thing about this is that it's just going to get more people on the side of 9/11 truth, because it's just so stupid. It's such a stupid, ridiculous argument.
Well, the dummies that want to be dummies, it's fine for them. It's good for them because they can say, look, we've got the report. Hundreds of engineers and all these structural experts have done this report, blah, blah, blah. Even though we know that's not true, it's only really like five or six people that were actually directly involved in doing this report, with one person that's been meteorically risen in his ranking in this institution. He's a foreigner, someone that's come from a third world country to a very wealthy country, and he's been groomed, and we've sort of demonstrated that a little bit earlier about his path, his career path. Anyway, and he's just one of their guys that, they own. Anyway, so at the end of the day, and that all led to the progressive collapse. Now, a simple way to put a progressive collapse to anyone in layman's terms is the old house of cards, really. That's what we've got. So we've got a situation where one particular area, because it was a long beam, had some thermal expansion, and it broke its joints on the floors there, and they fell, and then the other floors fell, and then the beams pulled in, and then the whole thing just collapsed. Now, obviously, it did start. Now, I've always, when people said the building collapsed in 6.6 seconds, that's true for the front facade of the building, but obviously the collapse did start at the back of the building from the view that we see it in the videos, started in the penthouse, which is around about that point of column 79, and it did move through the building, and then the facade came down. But still, from the top of the building, of the front facade, it was about 6.6 seconds. So we know that's very, very quick. Now, NIST use a way of arguing now in their question and answers that, well, it wasn't free fall at all, because they take the time from when that first penthouse beam goes to the time when it hits the ground. Now, that's not accurate.
I just have to say something here, because, when you say facade, a building, everything in a building is joined together. Okay.
That's right.
It's not as if it has some kind of marzipan.
They use that wording, facade, right?
Well, it's a false terminology, because the building is not made of marzipan. Okay, it's made of steel, concrete floors, steel columns, steel beams, and I'm not quite sure what the cladding of the building was. Do you know what Building 7, what the outer cladding of Building 7 was?
I think it's concrete, but I'm not sure.
I've seen a controlled demolition of another building. It's quite tall. It's about the same size, sort of 40 stories or something, as a white building, and they usually blow up from the bottom down, and it sort of goes
from the bottom. I've watched it so many times. It starts at the very bottom, right at the bottom, and it goes down from the bottom up. That's how it goes down.
And that's a traditional demolition, and you see these.
Understand the technicality of the argument they're making there is that the collapse started at the back of the building and it took maybe more like 10 seconds because bits of the building fell first, which we see in a controlled demolition. They brought the middle and the back of the building down, and then the rest followed. That's really what you want to do, isn't it, when you do a controlled demolition?
Are they actually claiming that what we see when we see the collapse in the videos is just the shell of a building with nothing on the other side?
They're alluding to that argument, yeah. But they don't actually say they don't use the shell, but that's the way that they're trying to push it. Yeah, the idea that the building sort of all collapsed behind and then we see the front come down. That's sort of how they're saying. Now, there definitely is evidence. Like, I do believe that a portion of the building was collapsing before the front section that we see was collapsing.
Yeah, you can see that penthouse go. You do see the penthouse go in a couple of the videos.
You do, right. And that does happen. And there is some. And then we see the crimp. So we see the middle columns, 26 or so columns or whatever, basically all giving way, and then the facade comes down. But, this is true, and it always happens. You don't ever get a perfectly timed sequence. But, geez, that for controlled demolition, I don't think I've ever seen one better than Building 7. Have you?
It's really, really precision. Really
Going back, I was just saying this building that I've seen where some of the charges, they don't go off, and the building actually slumps over and then sits there, bent over, and it's a solid piece of thing. It's like your guitar or something just all of a sudden crumbling into nothing. Yeah. It's a solid structure that can't just disappear into dust.
Well, we can't say where the collapse actually starts, which is around B building around level 13, and then there's other weaknesses at from 7 to 11. Like there's these two sort of zones that they talk about. We can't see those from our perspective in those videos. We only see the sort of the upper sort of 30 or so floors of the building. So, you know, there's some things we don't know what happens, but we do know basically what time the building starts to collapse from that front edge until when it hits the ground, and that still defies the laws of physics, the basic law of conservation momentum, which is not addressed again in this report. Anyway, so I'll just move on to some other things.
Yeah.
We've gone over the report, we've gone over the sort of conclusion. Now, how did they come to a conclusion? We have touched on the idea that they didn't use any real evidence or any physical evidence. Now, this is what was the words they used again? It was a new phenomenon of this thermal expansion. Now, how difficult is it to recreate a few floor beams, a couple of trusses, a couple of this, a couple of that, recreate it, put it in a furnace, and see what it does? So we can get some real data to put into this
computer model. Well, the quote I've got here is, our study found that the fires in WTC7, which were uncontrolled but otherwise similar to fires experienced in other tall buildings, caused an extraordinary event. I mean, that's a really ambiguous statement, isn't it?
It is. Now, so how did they come to the conclusions? Well, they didn't do a test. Well, we know Kevin Ryan came out. Even though he wasn't in charge of the actual division that did it, he came across the report about Building 1 and 2, where they got the trusses, which were another widespread sort of truss, open plan sort of idea of the buildings of World Trade Center 1 and 2, which has been very common in the last, you know, sort of 30, 40 years. People like the open plan. Anyway, so they did the truss analysis. They put it in the furnace for a very, very long period of time, a very, very high temperature, and it didn't demonstrate anywhere near the deflection that they needed. They had to double things. So they doubled the weights, and they halved this, and they doubled that. That's how they ended up getting that report done. Now, when Kevin Ryan came out about the truss analysis report he'd seen, which demonstrated that there was no possibility that it would do what they said it would do, you know, he was sacked, and basically that information was never released. Now, that's why they don't look at the physical evidence, or they don't try to do a simulation. Now, I work in the aircraft industry. Now, when we create a simulator for an aircraft, what do you think we do?
Right, yeah.
We get an actual aircraft, and we pick a certain registration of an aircraft, and we simulate that using the real aircraft to get the parameters to get all the information. We use a real aircraft to create the simulator.
Wow. Yeah.
That's what anyone does when you do a simulation.
Yeah.
But what does this simulation do? This simulation uses known data. Okay, so say, for instance, they know how hard something is, or they know how much they can deflect something or whatever, but basic material science type things, not actual the particular structure in this building. They haven't done that. That's all been generated by the computer. Now, they talk about how powerful these computers are and how good the software is, but we all know garbage in, garbage out.
Yeah.
So at the end of the day, if you don't have the real parameters because you haven't tested the actual structures, then what do you know? You know nothing.
Yeah,
and this is a completely nothing report, but very useful because it discounts a whole lot of things, which other people have been using to make an argument against us. So I sort of like it in a way, because it really comes up with nothing that you can't, you know, within a few hours see is completely illogical and basically based with nothing.
It's just nothing added to all the other nothings that have been.
It keeps going down that matrix idea that we see of the world at the moment, where you know, black is white and white is black. Like this is they've done a virtual report on a virtual building. You know, it might as well never existed because that's the way the report treats it, like it was never there in the first place.
I mean, it's not that much different, really, in substance to the scandal over the weapons of mass destruction, which were never found in Iraq, is it? I mean, it's the same type of lie that never was explained and covered up, and, you know, it's obviously a lie. Everyone can see it's a lie. And yet, you know, there are so many of them now in our common political discourse, and we basically have become sort of conditioned. And this is one of the things that kind of troubles me, John, is that a lot of people are somewhat conditioned now to lying, and you know, even when it's not so much that they either believe or don't believe. It's not as black and white as that. It's not as if, you know, there's all these people out there that just believe what they're told, and then there's us who don't believe. A lot of people are very skeptical, but they've been conditioned to the fundamental dishonesty that they see everywhere to such a degree that they accept it. They don't kind of like, and I think we've really got to, as we move forward with what we're trying to do, we've got to address this problem of you can't just think about it and then brush it under the carpet. You can't just be aware that there's a problem here and then not do something. Everyone who becomes aware of this absolutely has a duty and a responsibility to start doing something about it. What do you think about that? I mean,
oh, mate, that's exactly how I feel. But you know, like, say for instance, in my work environment, I can't go to work and speak to people that like that every day. Like today with that bloody whale, Colin. Now it's Colette. I did a little bit of research about the whale. There was a website already set up for ColinTheWhale.com. They're going to have a memorial to Colin the Whale.
Yeah.
You know, how many children are drinking sewage in Iraq at the moment? And we're worried about a freaking whale. You know, like, I know whales are important. They're mammals. They're part of the biodiversity. That's great. But we focus all this news energy on something so trivial. It's just such a distraction. I hear this lady on the train on the way home tonight talking about how terrible it is and how he's, you know, estranged from his mother and there's something wrong with it. You know, it's like it was really, people were feeling for this animal, you know, and they don't feel anything for anyone in the world that's actually being, you know, people that are being killed every day of the week because of our greed. You know, they couldn't care less.
That's the absolute disconnect that that is apparent in the society where someone, you know, there was someone that committed suicide in Pitt Street. They jumped off and people were just taking pictures with their mobile phones. They were just standing there taking pictures and really there was no empathy there. That was just some sort of like, wow.
Did the person jump off a building or what?
Yeah. I'll be popular once I forward this around on my Facebook. You know, that's the sort of attitude to life. Yet a puppy in Iraq gets thrown over a cliff and is
that
a total outrage.
Story. Yeah, that became a
total
a big story.
Outrage. And look, of course it should be an outrage that an animal gets killed. Absolutely. I'm not saying it shouldn't. But the disconnect between, you know, humanity, the general humanity of people is just sort of been cloaked by this greed and self-fulfillment. And I think it's a real shame.
The way we think now is convenient. It's a convenient way of thinking. We've changed from being rational and critical and demanding accountability to really just thinking, well, is it convenient for me to believe this or is it convenient for me to believe this?
It's so true.
It's this convenience that we're all after. And it's just, I don't know, I just can't stand for it anymore. And like, there's something inside me that's just said, I've had enough of this. And so many people continue to say, I believe Kim on the forum said the other day, and he does say some interesting things sometimes at the 9/11 Oz forum, which is quite an open and interesting, sometimes dangerous place that we've heard. But anyway, it's...
it's certainly dangerous. It's an interesting way of describing it. Yes.
That's right. But anyway, he said, he was talking about today how 9/11 was an opportunity, and I've been saying this all the way along, 9/11 is an opportunity for people to have a conscious change in the way that they think, you know, and to become critical and start to really reassess everything in the world today. And it's our chance to stimulate others to do that. But and this report is just another great example of this Orwellian type environment that we're in at the moment. It's just unbelievable.
Oh, yeah.
You know, if you were bringing this report to a court, you know,
well, we'd be laughing.
What would happen to it? Yeah. You know, it'd be like laughed at. Look, people would, you know, they'd
Adolf
be wiping
Hitler
their ass
said,
with it in the toilet. You know, like, it's just ridiculous.
You know, Adolf Hitler said, if you tell a big enough lie and you tell it frequently enough, it'll be believed. And that's actually where we're heading now, is that that people just use spin and lies and just parrot. And the way that the news media is structured, the mainstream media, is that once a story gets syndicated by a big station like the BBC, all of these little ones will start picking it up because that's seen as important. And so that'll be parroted by all these little radio stations all around the world. And so the common man watches TV, then turns on the radio, then turns on another station. You know, the news is on every hour. And he hears the same story from about three or four or five different news readers and says, right, that's the truth.
Yeah.
Well, look, they hear about coal on the whale, you know.
Yeah. Look, I think we're just going to break again for a song, John, as we do.
Okay, and we can do maybe a wrap up after that.
If you'd like to stay on, that'd be great. And after this segment, I'd kind of like to get into discussing a little more about the side of, you know, the movement and what we can do, because this is really important, getting into the facts, but then you get past the facts and you've got to get back to the question, what can we
activism.
Do? And let's pick that up after the break.
Sweet, pretty things on betting now, of course. The city fathers they're trying to endorse. The reincarnation of Paul Revere's horse. But the town has no need to be nervous. The ghost of Bell Star, she hands down her wits. To Jezebel and Nun, she violently knits. A bald wig for Jack the Ripper, who sits at the head of the Chamber of Commerce. Mama's in a factory, she ain't got no shoes. Daddy's in the alley, he's looking for food. I'm in the kitchen with a tombstone blues. Hysterical bride in the penny arcade, screaming she moans, I've just been made. Then sends out for the doctor, who pulls down the shade and says, my advice is to not let the boys in. Now the medicine man comes and he shuffles inside. He walks with a swagger and he says to the bride, stop all this weeping, swallow your pride. You will not die, it's not poison. Mama's in a factory, she ain't got no shoes. Daddy's in the alley, he's looking for food. I'm in the kitchen with the tombstone blues. Well, John the Baptist, after torturing a thief, looks up at his hero, the commander-in-chief, saying, tell me, great hero, but please make it brief. Is there a hole for me to get sick in? The commander-in-chief answers him while chasing a fly, saying, death to all those who would whimper and cry. And dropping a barbell, he points to the sky, saying, the sun's not yellow, it's chicken. Mama's in a factory, she ain't got no shoes. Daddy's in the alley, he's looking for food. I'm in the kitchen with the tombstone blues. The king of the Philistines, his soldiers to save, puts jawbones on their tombstones and flatters their graves. Puts the Pied Pipers in prison and fattens the slaves and sends them out to the jungle. Gypsy Davy with a blowtorch, he burns out their camps. With his faithful slave Pedro behind him, he tramps. With a fantastic collection of stamps to win friends and influence his uncle. Mama's in a factory, she ain't got no shoes. Daddy's in the alley, he's looking for food. I'm in trouble with the tombstone blues. The geometry of innocent flesh on the bone causes Galileo's math book to get thrown at Delilah, who's sitting worthlessly alone, but the tears on her cheeks are from laughter. I wish I could give Brother Bill his great thrill. I would set him in chains at the top of the hill, then send out for some pillars and Cecil B. DeMille. He could die happily ever after. mama's in a factory, she ain't got no shoes. Daddy's in the alley, he's looking for food. I'm in the kitchen with the tombstone blues.
Folks, fire has never, prior to 9/11, caused a steel frame building to collapse. The sudden vertical explosive and total collapse of the Twin Towers at near freefall speed can only be explained by controlled demolition. And Building 7 is exactly the same. Apart from not even an aeroplane hitting it, like the Twin Towers. Building 7 had some debris. That was Bob Dylan, folks. Just extraordinary song. Something to bring up the spirits. Something to get you fired up on this 22nd of August.
Welcome back, John. We'll just fix that.
Yeah, still got the echo.
Keep talking.
Go on now, yeah. Bob Dylan fired up a few people when he went electric, didn't he?
A little bit. In 1965, he certainly caused a few ripples there. He didn't lose his edge.
No, he just kept moving towards what he was aiming for, I suppose, just, you know. Pushing the boundaries.
That's how you keep an edge.
Well, I think he came pretty close to getting worried for his life. I think, from what I've picked up is that he really kind of didn't like being regarded as a threat to society. That's I saw an interview that was done a couple of years ago on 60 Minutes. I mean, pretty, you know, not a very highbrow sort of thing. But he was kind of like, you know, looking back at that time and saying, you know, didn't really want to be, you know, like regarded as a threat to society. Well, you know, sometimes art just does that and you can't help it, you know.
Exactly. Now, I've sort of got to get going. I've got to get back to a few other things, but I just want to do a quick wrap up of this report and just talk about the building code variations that they've asked for. Now, this is a really good example of the whole report, and we can take any particular section of the report and probably look at it in a similar way. Now, there's 8 recommendations that they're putting forward, basically about building changes. Now, only one of the 8 is actually directly related to the reasons why Building 7 collapsed. And that's probably as close as everything else is. There's probably only about, you know, a very small percentage of the report that we've seen that actually relates to making any sense about why Building 7 collapsed. Now, the only thing that they've actually really said that needs to be done is that these particular long floor truss beams and columns in those particular areas, they have to be treated as more of a primary structure and they have to be fireproof to a higher rating. But there's no increase in strength or anything else. Most of these additional things that they've added to the building code is an additional exit stairway, which is probably something that they've been thinking about doing anyway. And a lot of these things, I think, are in the same light where they've basically had these things that they want to upgrade, but they've saved them for this report so that they can say, look, we're changing all these things so people can feel as if there's been, you know, the problem reaction solution thing, you know, and here's the solution. But really, it's only related to this structural frame type approach to these floor truss assemblies in these areas of these long spans. They're basically upping the fire rating. Everything else there, increasing fire protection, adhesiveness and things like that, which really don't that might make sense if a plane's hitting the building, like in one building one or two, where you know they want the fireproofing to stay there. But in this situation, none of the fireproofing was dislodged. They want a minimum of one fire service to access elevator for buildings over 120 feet, which is probably something that the fire brigade have been asking for 100 years. Who knows? But anyway, basically, the only thing that directly relates to this situation is the increase of fireproofing on these particular structures that they say failed. But besides that, that's really it. So it's a nothing report with nothing fixed as well. So at the end of the day, it's a complete nothing report of an extraordinary event that was caused by a single new phenomenon that we haven't really looked into and we haven't created any proper models for. So it's just a complete joke. And on that note, I'd say goodbye and have a good rest of the show, and I'll have a listen tomorrow. And
thank you, John.
We're out tomorrow at 2 o'clock, handing information about the Illusion 9/11 meeting and the part of the trilogy is coming up. Obviously,
could you give us a bit of a promo for the Trilogy of Truth in September, because we haven't really covered that in detail on the show.
If you've got a moment or two, of what's happening in September.
Yeah.
Sharon came up with the name of a fearless trilogy, which I think is a great name.
That's a great
because
name, yeah.
It's all about fear, isn't it? And keeping us in fear. And that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to fear less by getting the evidence and the truth and the facts, which, you know, make us feel more comfortable with what we're dealing with. So anyway, we've got three events.
Oh, look, it doesn't make me feel comfortable that my government is lying to me and killing 3,000 people.
Well, from a solution point of view, for me, I feel the more I know about what's going on, the more I feel able to address it. Obviously, that's a realist point of view. It's very frightening, but we're already there, aren't we? We're all in the gulag already, us three, we're there.
Yeah, well, so I just want to know the truth.
We've got to get on with fighting it before we end up in there. So it's really just the more we know about it, the better, because we're more armed to deal with it. But anyway, so we've got three events on September 11th, September 12th, and September 13th. September 11th is called Delusion 9/11. It's also Sharon came up with that name, which I think really expresses what we're going through. Are we deluded? Are they deluded? Like, it's just asking the question. Obviously, someone's deluded, and let's find out who that is. And we're going to have Dr. David Leifer, Dr. Frank Legg, and numerous other speakers at that event. Then on September 12th, we've got the film screening of Shadow Play, which will be in the 70 to 80 minute version. Gillian's going to have a whole lot of different versions for different purposes.
Now, you're an executive producer of that film.
Well, it's all about if you put some money in, basically. That's all that means. I mean, I have had some critical input into the film, just from a point of view of what's info and what's not, which we're constantly going through in this process, as we know, and we've been talking about.
Well, the whole 9/11 truth movement is a scientific process where we constantly analyze ourselves as well as the information that's fed to
We have to keep doing that. That's right. But once we reach a consensus on things, we also have to sort of accept things a little bit so that we can sort of form some sort of argument that everyone sort of sticks to. And there's some things that everyone supports, and that's important, but we have to be constantly reassessing things. That's for sure. And then on September 13th, on the Saturday night at the Bat and Ball, we're having a get-together celebration of truth, and everyone that obviously is welcome to come along. It's a bit of a fundraiser, but if you don't have any money, you can still come along. That's how all the events are. They're free, but we'd love to get some donations so we can put on more events in the future. I've run out of money, so it's over for me. If I don't get the money back that I put into this one, there won't be any more unless someone else comes up with some money. So that's the situation. So hopefully we'll get the people.
There'll always be more. People are hungry for the truth, and so come along, folks.
And I should point out that on the second night, on the screening of the film by Gillian Norman, we are doing a Truth News special radio podcast.
Yeah, that's right. Herald's going to be chairing a forum after the film, and it's going to go into the podcast, and we'll have it as a historical record, which will be a great thing.
Yeah, so
indeed.
You get your asses down there, folks. Fly interstate to Sydney if you can. Hook up with some friends. It'll be a great weekend.
It's really easy. It's always at 7 o'clock, 7 in the evening until, you know, 11 or late as far as the party goes. But anyway, it's about 7 till 10, Tom Mann Theatre, both nights for the public meeting and then for the film screening, Tom Mann Theatre, which is just around the corner for Central Station, very easy to find, 136 Charmer Street. And then the party nights at the Bat and Ball Hotel, which is a very easy, iconic place to find, all just walking distance from Central Station. So there's no excuse not to come. It's easy to get to, and come along and have a great time. And I'll say goodbye. If you want more details, go to 911oz.com or truthaction.org.au for information. And I'll see you all later.
See you later, John. Thank you.
Well, that was John Bursell.
There goes a man with a lot of integrity and just a top bloke. So next on the show, we're going to talk about a little bit about...
We need to do a promo.
Yeah, well, that's true.
You're listening to Truth News Radio Australia with Herowood Fenton and...
Joshua Jackson.
And Truth News Radio Australia can be downloaded from truthnews.com.au or from 911oz.com. And we look into the nooks and crannies... And we examine some of the naughtiness and mischief that is rampant on this planet.
The corruption, the lies, the disinformation, we expose it all here.
And we hope to produce results, folks.
We ask the questions because we don't know all the answers. And that's the main reason that the media exists. But the media isn't doing their proper job, so it's up to citizen journalists like ourselves to become the mainstream media using this amazing thing that's being given to us by the world of geeks, and that is the internet.
In the last segment of the show tonight, I want to actually engage a little discussion. Just the two of us, about something that I consider to be kind of important. Now, as we were talking earlier, you know, there's something that keeps welling up inside of me. And when I feel things welling up inside of me, this is part of me that goes back to the time when I was just an ordinary person looking at the world, listening to people talk, and as I still do. You know, I'm still an ordinary person. But the point is, when I used to listen to people talking on the radio, and I'd think, I've got an opinion, and why aren't they talking about this? Yeah. Why do they only talk about that? Have you ever had that experience? Because I used to have that a lot. Oh, why are they always just going down this one channel? Why don't they go that way? Because that's more important. And this is the point I want to bring up now, is that I think there's something as important as analyzing the, you know, structural behavior of a steel beam under heat is important. I don't deny its importance. However, I think there's something that's actually more important once you've basically worked out that you're being lied to. Okay, once you've worked that out, going on and on about the lie itself. Oh, they lied, they lied, they lied, they lied. Yeah, okay, we know they lied. Now what? Okay, yeah. And it's the now what that I really want to get into, because I know a lot of people feel the same way. Mm-hmm. They think, well, you guys just always talk about something bad or something you lied.
You're so negative.
Where does it all go? You're just conspiracy theorists. Because the idea then comes that all you do is sit around finding problems, finding negativity. Mm. So one part of this for me is moving away from the concept of oh, they lied to justice, time for justice.
Yeah.
It's not just about factual correction. It's about the lies were part of a deliberate campaign of deceit, which led to mass murder, which led to the destruction of our civilization ongoing in many aspects, in many different ways.
Well, look, folks, all around
what
us,
are we going to do about it?
We see... The more and more of this national ID system, of biometric systems, of everything, you've got to give up everything to be controlled and tracked and traced, for we aren't young and free anymore. We are tracked and traced. And all around us, it's the guise of terrorism. Terrorism will get you. We must track your email because terrorists use email. And we must, you know, tax your breathing because you're causing global warming by the carbon that you put. It's just this constant barrage of your rights being taken away from you. And what are we going to do about it? Well, we're going to stand up. We need more people in government, more people that are active. Instead of
sitting there. Because we can win this back. We can take this back. We can turn it around. I'm fully convinced now that the only thing that is stopping us turning it around is the idea in people's minds that they can't. Their self-limiting beliefs is why we don't turn it around. As soon as you stop those self-limiting beliefs, it won't just be me and Josh sitting in a bunker in inner Sydney. There'll be thousands of us, even in Australia. You see,
folks. Start your own radio show. Oh, get in there.
Goodness,
start
yes.
your own blog. Start your own website. But better than that, get off the web. Get into government. Get off the web. Get into your local community. Build community centers. Help out people. Get away from this massive corporate culture of having to constantly spend into the system, of propping the system up. But especially, I mean, I think what we need is I mean, really, honestly speaking, I think we need financial reform. We need banking reform. Monetary reform to get away from the fractional reserve banking system that is in place in pretty much every part of the world now, where these global banking elites, these banks just get to create money out of nothing on a fraction of what they actually own, and which is usually nothing now, creating massive, every bit of money that is created is into debt. But that's a whole nother show, and we're going to
but
go
this
into
is
that
where,
later.
This is where truth news becomes truth activism. Because let's face it, the concept of just telling the news just for the sake of telling you what's going on never was totally honest, folks. When news was first created, it always had two roles.
It was a propaganda.
It was a way of giving you information, but also with that information, controlling.
Yeah. No, absolutely. And you see that really insidiously when you see the build-up to the Iraq war. I mean, it was so blatant. It was so transparent. It was so vast. And it was so diabolical that these people went to the lengths of going to the UN and displaying forged documents to then parroting that onto every news channel.
Now confirmed by impeccable sources from Washington, from the CIA, that a letter was forged.
Yeah, this has all come out
by
the
CIA
now.
At the behest of the White House.
Yeah,
implicating Saddam Hussein in nuclear weapons.
A forged document, folks. This is a document forged by the CIA to showcase on the mainstream news to grasp all your minds, your body, and your soul into total fear that Saddam Hussein has his finger on a button right now and that he could set off this. And not only that, that Donald Rumsfeld comes out and says, I know where they are, where the weapons of mass destruction. They're in the north, they're in the south, they're in the east, they're everywhere.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, that's an indirect quote. It's pretty much what he said. They're north, they're south, they're in the west, they're in the east, they're everywhere.
They are indeed. They are. The evil is pervasive.
So you get this news media all around the globe parroting the same rubbish that is fed to you from the Ministry of Truth.
What are we going to do with these criminals, Josh? We've got to work out a criminal system. I'll tell you why. The criminal system that we currently have deals with people who are economically destined to become criminals, who are people like your classic image of a criminal, i.e. a thief, a drug dealer.
Yeah.
You know, that is our mind's eye over what a criminal is, okay? But there is this other class of criminals. And we've got to rethink language. We've got to understand language in a different way because there's this other class of criminals who we must understand as criminals and stop seeing them as important men wearing suits and understand them as criminals. They are criminals who are actually in the most dangerous possible position of all for a criminal to be. They are in power.
Oh, not only that, they've got friends in pretty much every sector to help their need. You know, these are white collar criminals. That just look like the businessmen. They fit into the penguin, the march of the penguins. When you see every penguin there in their business suit, they don't stand out. They're hidden. They're camouflaged. And so when you see them, they look respectable and well off. Where really they're working for they've got friends in the industrial military complexes, they've got friends in the industrial medical complexes or the sickness industry. They have then they start embezzling and they start getting contracts for these guys, for that guy, for their friends. And it gets to the point, and this is actually what's happened, is that these mafia is a brand of these sort of groups, but these organized crime syndicates.
Yeah, mafia is a way. It's a word. Yeah,
it's a word. It's a brand of a certain crime syndicate. Yeah. But these crime syndicates gaining so much power in government that they end up ruling all of us. These people have corrupted our system, our governments, they have corrupted the monetary system. They have corrupted the military system. They have corrupted the health system. And we are now relying on these people. And then we get these people having the gall to say that, no, they're respectable politicians. They're respectable businessmen.
Yeah.
When really they're nothing but cheap, fat, disgusting crooks who sit around making their, feathering their own nest off other people's miseries.
So what are we going to do? I mean, what are we going to do?
I mean, the first thing is information, Harold. I really think shows like this, shows like Alex Jones's, shows all around the world, podcasts from truth networks around the world are waking people up. The movies that Julian Norman created, Shadow Play, The Loose Changes, the Money Masters, Money of Debt, all these films that are freely available on YouTube. These are information getting out to the people to open their eyes, because we don't even get told where money comes from in school. We don't even get told. When we get told by our mainstream news that the Federal Reserve has decided to lift interest rates, we go, right. But what does that actually mean? What does it mean to lift interest rates? How do they lift interest rates? How do you lift the interest rate of a currency? Well, you just print less money.
Yeah.
Or you print more money. You put more, not even print it, you just click it into a computer. But anyway, digressing, the fact of the matter is, Harold, to answer your question, is the first step is to be educated, because an uneducated class of people are enslaved. Ignorance is a way of enslaving people into a form of control that is so insidious that it can be used for anything. I mean, we've got people right now thinking it's normal and there's nothing wrong with having mercury in your system, and having fluoride in the water. There's nothing wrong with consuming vast amounts of fluoride. I mean, purely because they aren't educated in what fluoride does to the brain and to the bones.
You remind me of a story from the last week or so, which I wanted to cover on tonight's show, which is actually, there's been a group of, it's actually an activist group connected to the farming sector, which is trying to catalog all farms that use genetically modified crops in Australia.
Wow.
And they've actually got... I believe they've got a website, and I'll try and find it and put it in the show notes if I can. But it's an excellent initiative, but it's been attacked. And the only reason it's come up in the news is because it's been viciously attacked by the Farmers Federation, of all things. Basically, and all they're doing, all this group is doing, I should point out, is they are trying to provide information for those farmers who do not want to use genetically modified crops, or for the general population to know who's using them. And they are being attacked by major organizations, major funded organizations trying to shut them down. I mean, this is a free speech issue, folks.
Well, this is education, shutting down education. shutting down the means for you to make up your own choice.
Yeah. And when they were approached on this, and there was a radio interview, and they were asked, you know, well, why are you doing this? And they were saying, well, the farmers who don't want to use genetically modified crops need to know who is using them so that their own crops don't get contaminated by it. I mean, it's a fundamental right that you don't have to subject yourself to contamination of something.
And that's what it is, folks. Don't fool yourself.
Well, I mean, it's actually leads to litigation. What the whole system is totally corrupt. What happens is one farmer has them genetically modified, the other doesn't. The seeds blow in the wind, they contaminate the next property. And the next thing you know, the farmer on that piece of land is being litigated
by Monsanto. I know. And it's happened countless of times, folks. These farmers are getting sued by Monsanto for growing a little bit of genetically modified crop because it's been polluted by the next farmer next door.
I mean, regardless of the dangers of GM crops, which I do think are severe, the mere fact that they are using GM as a way of controlling people.
Look, that's the real
fact. It's an abuse of human rights.
It's abuse of decency and everything. Look, I've said it before. We can argue till we're black and blue in the face about is genetically modified food good or bad for you. The fact of the matter is that's a non-argument.
Yeah, yeah.
Because some genetically modified foods could be bloody brilliant for you. And some will be absolutely awful.
Yeah.
But the real argument here is that massive global corporations, huge conglomerate corporations, are cornering markets of staple foods like corn.
And
like
that
wheat,
is something you should be really like concerned canola. About. That is something to be very, very worried
very
about.
Very worried, folks. When one company owns the staple food of everything, and not only that, but is you know, pollution, when you pollute an area, nature has an amazing way of usually, even if it takes 100, 200, 1,000 years, of correcting itself and unpolluting. But when you genetically pollute, all it does is grow.
They've genetically engineered certain crops to be resistant to certain forms of pesticide. I mean...
Oh, that's the Roundup Ready stock.
I mean, maybe it's safe. I mean, it sounds pretty wacky to me. I mean, it's like imagine engineering people to be sort of, immune to
some
rat
spray.
Poison or something.
So now we can put rat poison in everyone's cereal. Look, that is the real issue here is massive corporations cornering a market. For the third world to end. And again, these food prices, you know, these are the things that people have to change. And it's because of groups like these guys that are going around indexing. I sincerely congratulate and hold with the highest of regard. Anyone that is active in any of their belief, I hold in the highest of regards.
They're doing a great service indeed.
Absolutely. So, folks, ask yourself what you can do for the truths and for the things that you want to find out about. Ask yourself how you can make a better society, because that's the only thing that is in life. When we sit here and worry only about ourselves, when we sit here and worry only about our own jobs, our own fam, our own house, that is when you start feeling depressed about life. It's when you go around and help others. It's when you help your neighbor. When you help the local council to do something better. And you do it with all heart and with scrubbing corruption to the side. When you take on the big boys. When you take on massive corruption. And you say, I'm not going to stand it anymore. I'm not going to stand for it anymore. I'm going to do something about it, folks. That is when you can make a difference.
And on that note,
I'm Joshua Jackson.
I'm Heroin Fenton.
And good night.
Good night, Australia. Good night and good luck. And we'll be back real soon. You can find Truth News Radio Australia on the internet at www.truthnews.com.au, where you can subscribe to our podcast and download our RSS feed. Please tell your friends.